The last thing we spoke about was the case of Kavutz on Lamed Beis Amud Aleph. And keep in mind that we were worrying about Kavutz. Rashi says that Kavutz suffers from Uktzin. You see that on the top line on Lamed Beis Amud Aleph in Rashi. Yotzim v'shidra shalo Uktzin k'min kotzin. Certain thorns that come out of the lulav. It's not pleasant. It's not healthy to take this kavutz. So I wanted to point out something with regard to kavutz. You may remember that we mentioned the Ramban. The Ramban says that the psul of kavutz is the be'inon noam, right? Drachea darchi noam. Vizeh, but this lulav chovlimhu, this kind of lulav is a chovel, you know, it damages you, and it's not noam. So last time we got together, I was of the opinion when I read this Ramban that according to the Ramban, this lulav is pasul. Let's call it a balmum. There's something objectionable about such a lulav. I mean, look at the lulav. It's got kotzim, and that's not what a lulav should look like. You know, that was the impression I got when I first learned this Ramban. But I would like to suggest something else. That maybe the Ramban is saying that the fact that the lulav has kotzim does not in any way passel the lulav. The lulav per se is a lulav. It's born a lulav, it was raised a lulav, it's a lulav. The problem with this lulav is that the Torah wants a kiyum ha-mitzvah. When we implement the mitzvah, the Torah wants it to be in a pleasant way. And the pasuk drachei darchei noam reflects on the maisa mitzvah, the way we do lekachtem lecha. Again, the lulav per se, in and of itself, is a lulav. Okay, you know, you could fault the lulav for having kotzim, but afal pichen, it's a lulav. You know, it's not like all the other cases we're going to have nistak, and we're going to have nechlak and nitol, and you know, lulavim that are really, really puzzle. There's something objectionable to the lulav. Here, the objectionable part is the way or the experience of implementing the mitzvah, the maisa mitzvah, the maisa netila. And I was wondering if we could come up with an afkamina. Here's what I want to throw out. Just, you know, nizrikomi piya chabur. I'm going to ask a theoretical question which is going to sound totally crazy. But imagine if I can take one of the dalad minim without a lekicha, without an atila, and still fulfill a mitzvah. Let's imagine in our mind, you know, we let the mind wander a little bit, that we can somehow achieve a mitzvah without a netila.
I got one. I don't know if it works, but let's say you put one on a drone and you use a joystick. You raise it up off the ground just by using the joystick.
That's a shaylah grama, you know, where the gram netil is okay. Netil sidai, you have a lot of shaylahs like that, you know, where you open the water and then you remove the dam and then you put your hands underneath, you know, kocheni and so forth and so on. But I want to talk about something else. That would be a chatzitza. That's also
no. It's amazing. Can you do that? Is there such?
Yeah, no. Chatzitza is poser. You know, you need a lekicha. Your mamish need a lekicha without a chatzitza. I'll tell you what I have in mind. Okay, this is sugya later on in Masechta Sukkah. It's called zekifa. You want to write that down? We'll have a whole, again, if we get to, we'll have a whole to do about zekifa. In the Beis Hamikdash, there was a mitzvah called zekifa, and it reflected on one of the four minim. Which one of the four minim? The Arava, correct. The Hoshana, the Arava. And that's called Zekifas Arava. And the Mishnayos later on in Sukkah describe the pageantry and the color of this experience of Zekifas Arava, the Mizbeach, and different stories about the Tztukim and so forth. And basically, the way we experience Hoshana Rabbah on the seventh day of Sukkot is very much reflective of the central role that the Arava plays. But in the case of the Arava, you don't need a Maisa Netilah. The Kiyum HaMitzvah is to set up, not to take the Arava, not to shake the Arava, lift the Arava, but to set the Arava up on top of the Mizbeach. And I'm wondering out loud, just the crazy thought that occurred to me, what would be if you had an Arava that was covered, meaning it was full of oktzim, is it called an Arava or is it not? If the psul of kavutz is in the lulav, and therefore by equation in the Arava, then it would be possible even for the mitzvah of zakifa. But if on the other hand, one would argue that the psul of kavutz is not inherent in the lulav is fine. The problem is netila. Then what would be in the state of Arava, not the Arava that I need for Netila, that for sure can't be Kavutz, but what about the Arava that I need for Zekifa? Would that also come under the halacha of Jochel Dachi Noam, where the Kiyum HaMitzvah is in the Mizbeach? The mitzvah is not in the Gavra, it's not in the person who takes the Arava, but rather that the Mizbeach should be adorned and supplied with an Arava. And if this Arava is an Arava, it matters not what I suffer with this Arava. It matters whether or not it's an Arava.
What is Zekifa?
Zekifa means to set something up.
Okay.
Anyway, I just wanted to throw that out as something to think about.
I mean, the lulav is based on the kachdan, so there's lekicha, there's a personal, it's got to be able to handle it.
Right. So when you say lekicha, there's rochel dachino, but it's zekifa, when you have to see to it that
this is rochel kefas.
Right, it's in the kefas of the mizbeach. You know, the arav itself is only a means to set up a mizbeach. That first we have to surround the Mizbeach, then we have to do Zekifa al Gabi Mizbeach. I don't know if there's a din of Jochel Dachi Noam with regard to Zekifa.
I mean, there's a different tab in the Sukkah. If you're saying you've got things dropping off the Schach, is it also from the Schach? I
don't know. The Hutzin.
It's not because of Jochel Dachi Noam, it's the Yeshiv and the.
Right.
Again, it's a personal, it's a Gabi type of
it. That's what I want. Okay. That was Kovitz. The second thing I want to talk to you is about what's called the Solik Bechad Hutza. Do you remember that? Mm-hmm. So let's see what the Gemara says about the Solik Bechad Hutza. Omar Rava, Hailu Lava, the Solik Bechad Hutza. It's about 8 lines down from the top of your page. Balmumhu Upasal. I'm inclined to think that Balmum is the most extreme psul in lulav. I mean, you can have something that's not a lulav at all, and that we're going to discuss later on. But as long as it's a lulav and you want to disqualify for the mitzvah, the most extreme disqualification, which would apply for all 7 days, would be a Balmum. A Balmum. And what's the problem with this lulav? Solik Bechad Hutza. So we have many, many different shitos about what Solik Bechad Hutza is. We'll start with Rashi. Rashi says, Shekol Olav Mitzad Echad. It's kind of like a lopsided or a one-sided lulav. The olim show up on one side of the shidra, but there are no olim on the other side of the shidra. That's Rashi. Now, the second shita that we want to mention is the Rambam shita. See if I can quote you the Rambam here. I have it somewhere. Did I give it out to you? I think I gave it out to you. Oh yeah, you have it? Okay, now you hold on to this because if I take one more sheet, I'm going to get all of it. let me just find mine. Okay. The Solik Bechad Hutza. Just give me 1 minute to get myself organized here. The Rambam has a different sheet. Here it is. The Rambam says, Derech halulav shiyu olav gedelim shnayim shnayim mechubar migabon. Right, each olah has really 2 olim that are attached in the back. So there's one attachment. You've seen it. You know, sometimes you separate them because you want to use it. You know, let's say you have a posel lulav and you want to use it for agad, or you want to use it for for kaishalav, whatever you want to do with it. ubelulav zeh ha'olim eino mechubarim mitchilas briyosam echad l'chaveru. So whereas the olim are made of two olim that are connected, this one has one olah straight through the lulav. You know, it's every single olah in the lulav that goes up is single rather than double. I would like to compare that later in Mitzvah Shem to the sugya of Nechlika Hatiyomis, because Nechlika Hatiyomis sounds awfully similar to the Rambam's description of Solik B'chad Chutza. But in any event, the Rambam doesn't say anything about the fact that you need to have Olim on both sides of the Shidra. And we'll soon see that according to the Aruch HaNer, the premise is that the Rambam would not disqualify Rashi's Lulav. I'm not sure that that's so, we will see the Bach, but that's one possibility. And then we have a third possibility, which is the Rav Sar Shalom, and he says sheyesh b'luv rak hutza echad bi'ikro. No, there's only one ola that goes straight through up until the end of the shidra. Maybe on top it separates, but from the bottom you'll only find one solid piece, so to speak. You know, it doesn't separate into, you know, normally you have many olim attached to the shidra, here you have only one. Okay, there are many other interpretations of what Solik B'chad Hutza is, but what I find absolutely fascinating here, and that's why I wanted to spend a little bit of time on this, is the Aruch HaNer, who's also famous for authoring the Bikurei Yaakov. He says the following. You have Rashi and his lulav, that's possible. You've got the Rambam and his lulav, and then you have Rav Sar Shalom. Now we have three lulavim on the table. And each one of them is possible according to one of the Rishonim, but the question is, what can I do in this case? He says, Hoel upsul shel solik v'chad hutza bi'ala ha'elyon eno el l'pirush ha'rambam. Okay, I'm not sure how he knows that according to the Rambam it's the Olah HaElyon. That I don't know. I would have thought maybe it means many of the Olim, not just the Olah HaElyon. In any event, L'Rashi Apirushu Sha'olav G'dela Mitzad Echad, L'Rav Sar Sholom Apirusha Olah Ola Mi'ikro, there's one Olah going up from the bottom to the top. In Kenim Yeshlo Gimel Lulavim Ka'elu. So he's got one Lulav that represents the Solik L'chad Hutza according to each respective sheet of the Rishonim. So all the psulim are represented on the table, right? That doesn't sound too positive, right? But he says, no, it's very good. Yachol b'manav shach latzeis ulevarech aleihem hoil ulechol echad me'apirushim echad me'alulavim kosher. He says, why not take all three? So if we have in front of us, you know, sitting at this table, we'll have a tribunal made up of Rashi, the Rambam, and Sar Shalom. Each one of them would say that I was Yotze the Lulav. Again, each one would point maybe to a different Lulav, or maybe to two out of the three Lulavim and say that this one is not. But at the end of the day, there would be a unanimous vote in favor of Yotze Yedei Chovaso, because each one passes one particular Lulav. He says further, Hol chol apirushim echad me'alulavim kosh v'chein bi'ein lo ela echad me'alulavim ha'elu. Then he goes on to say that each one of these lulavim in and of itself is a suffik, because again we don't know whether we pass like Rashi or the Rambam or the Sar Shalom. And therefore with regard to the balance of yontif, which is only a chiv d'rabbanon, we should apply the principle of suffik d'rabbanon l'kula, and we can therefore be yotze the mitzvah on the rest of the days with any one of these lulavim. Omnam habach kosav shekol hapirushim emes, meaning that each one of these lulavim is possible, and they're all three psulim. Again, you don't know exactly what Rav and the Gemara had in mind, but in any event, each one is possible. In other words, whereas the Aruch HaNer understands that each one is a suffix because it's possible according to one of the three opinions, but the other two lulavim are sherim according to that opinion, the Bach seems to understand that we have to adopt all three shitos and assume that all three lulavim are possible, and the nafkamina is going to be, in this case, we have all three lulavim sitting on the table. Okay. So far, so good. I mean, I just titrated. We just tried to translate the text here that we see quoted here, the Yalkut Bi'ur. Why do I find this fascinating? Does anyone want to take a stab at it? What is it about this Bikuri Yaakov? I mean, I think it's a little bit of a trick in the eye here. You know, at the face of it, he sounds like he's 1,000% correct. Unless you go with the Bach and say that all three are psulim. But if you assume that each one is possible according to its Baal HaShita, but the other two are Ksheirim according to the Baal HaShita, so at the face of it, the Bikuri Yaakov is 1,000% correct. So, Mimanavshav, no matter how you slice the cake, I was Yotzi the Mitzvah, because I definitely took the Kosher Lulav. Again, can you point to which Lulav was Kosher? No. Okay, but that's your problem. You know, so you don't know which Lulav is Kosher. You know? If you were giving the Lulavim over to someone else and asking him to be Yotze, right, let's say with the Matana Manas Lahatsir on the first day, whatever it was, then you might not be able to tell him which one is the real Lulav. So, you know, please stand up, I can't tell you that, but take all three and you'll definitely be Yotze. I don't know why you have to take all three. I'm not so clear about it. Maybe you can take two out of the three. But he says, you know what, take all three. Does anybody see a little bit of a problem here? Like, here we are, the Aruch HaNer is here in the room. You know, he's saying this shiur, right, in 1820 in Germany. Right? So does anybody want to get up and maybe argue with him? You see, my question to you is the following. We have a rule, and I'm focused now on the first day of Sukkot, because that's what he's talking about, the first day. Second day, he has no problem. But with regard to the first day, what if, let's add one of these lulavim, which rule would operate here? And the Aruch HaNer is not denying this. He's admitting to this. Which rule would operate? Not Sofik Darabon Lukul, but Sofik Darais Lukul. In other words, I could not... Again, you know, I might encourage you to take the lulav, just in case, kind of thing. But if I only had one lulav, I would have to apply the rule of Safek Dorais L'chumra, go find yourself a different lulav. And that would be true for any of these three lulavim. I don't think the Aruch HaNer is denying that. So my question to you is, anybody want to ask my question? I mean, again, I'm talking to you like I talk to
each one should be Nuchbachman, each one individually.
Right, why not separate each lulav individually and ask what's the psak on this lulav? Meaning the Aruch HaNer is not willing to do the following. He's objecting to the following approach, which I think could be a logical approach. Let's isolate each lulav. Look in Shulchan Aruch. Go to the Rav. Ask the Rav for Hora. Yotza, lo yotza. Kosher, pasul. What's the status of this lulav? Once the Rav has paskined on the lulav, then I already have a psak. I'll give you a mashal of my dover dom. The Gemara says in Psachim that if two people go down two roads, two paths, and there's a mess, there's a dead corpse in one of the two roads. We don't know which two roads. Right? This is the famous sugi called what? Shnei Shvilim. You remember the it's like a world class sugi. Shnei Shvilim. Psachim, wherever it is, Daf Zion or so. So now here's the deal. If one of these two individuals comes in front of Beis Din and he asks whether he's Tomei or not, so then we apply the principle called Uki Gavra Becheskes Tara, and we can send him home and he's Tar. But if they both come together, and now I must issue a Horah which is relevant to both roads, both paths, then he's Tomei. And what I'm suggesting to you is this following, that if in and of itself, each lulav stands on its own, again, not like the Aruch HaNer, and demands a psak, am I kosher or am I not? So would the Aruch HaNer be willing to say, I'll give you an example, let's say that there was Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. Reuven had lulav A, that's Rashi's psul, and Shimon had lulav B, that's the Rambam's psul, and so forth and so on. And each one of these balei halulav, because each one was an arm of lulav, would come in front of the Rav and ask for a psak. His psak would be its posel, albeit me didn't suffik, but suffik deraisa l'chumra. So therefore, when we combine all three together, do we ignore the original psak on each lulav individually, or do we have a right al pidin to combine the three into one element and offer a psak that's common to all three, which means that amongst the three, I definitely have a kosher.
There's an advantage of having three. Being better than two, you can say little barayim. The rice is also good.
I hear. So maybe he's applying the principle a bit, but I don't think so, because I'll tell you why. I think what he's saying, if you read his language, is not that it's batel, but he's saying that one of the three is definitely kosher. That's his language. Let's see. He says, L'chol ha-pirushim echad me'alulofim kosher. Okay. Now, I want to raise a different question, which I think is very much relevant to this Aruch Lameh. How does Psak Halacha revolve? Again, I know I'm getting going way off the block, way off the dot here, but just this fascinates my mind. And I think it touched on something that we covered here in the Kol when we were doing Chuppah of the Kiddushin a few months ago. How does Psak Halacha evolve, so to speak? How do we come up with a Psak? I want to offer two approaches, and I think it's going to be a fundamental machlokes between the Shach and the Taz. You know, going back four centuries in time. One way is to say it the following. We have every posek here in front of us, kaviyachol, and we have to satisfy every posek. If we can satisfy every posek, and each posek sitting on the panel would say kosher, then that's fine. That's one approach. The other approach is no. What we have to do is, we have to interpret the case and paskin on the case based on all the klali halacha, all the horah that would have taken place beforehand on each individual issue. Meaning, whereas the first approach goes back to, so to speak, the gavra haposek, and we have to satisfy every posek. And if every rishon says yay and it's kosher, then we're fine. That's one approach. The other approach says no, but conceptually, how does the halacha approach each individual suffek unto itself? Okay. So what I want to call to your attention, again, this is all very abstract, and I don't think you understood a word I said, neither did I, so don't feel bad. But what I mean to say is that there's a sefer here called the Divrei Yosef. The Divrei Yosef was Rav Yosef Cohen. I had the schus of hearing shiurim from him. He was really a dayan, but also a Rosh Hashiva. I mean, combined both. And he sat on the Batei Dinim here, and he had to deal with many, many very serious issues, especially in Ebenezer. And he compiled his Chidushim in this two-volume work called Divrei Yosef, much of which we covered here in the Kol when we were studying Chuppah v'Kiddushin. So this Siman, which is Hilchus Ishus Siman Vav, addresses the issue of the Psul Zona L'Kahuna. Now, the Psul Zona L'Kahuna has two different spin-offs. Number one, whether she herself became a Zona and she can't marry a Kohen. And number two, if she went ahead and married a Kohen, what's the status of the Vlad? So the specific issue here in Siman Vav, in defining a Zona that we're going to hone in on, is the question of a woman, a Bas Yisrael, who had Be'ila to Chayve Lavin. Again, if it was Chayvi Mises Bezdin or Chayvi Krisus, then for sure she's a Zona and she could have married Cohen and the child is Pogum Lakun and so forth. But the issue here, which is a subject of Machlok, the Rama and the Rush, is going to be Nivola L'Chayvi Lav. Okay. L'Chayvi Lav. And she had an illicit relationship with a person, the severity of that criminal act is a Lav. It's not Kares, it's not Misa, it's low echelon. Okay. Now, with regard to Nivala Li'akum, if she had Be'ila with a guy, so the Rambam writes that she becomes a Zona, and the Rambam takes that case of Nivala Li'akum one step further, and he applies it to Chayvei Lavin. So just like Nivala Li'akum, she becomes a Zona, so too, according to the Rambam, Nivala L'Chayvei Lavin, she becomes a Zona. The Tur quotes the Rambam in Siman Vav, and he mentions that his father, the Rosh, disagrees with the Rambam. According to the Rosh, as quoted here by the Tur, there's a fundamental difference between Nivala L'Yakum which he had relations with a non-Jew, and nivla l'chai ve'lav. Says the Beis Yosef that the rush in the case of chai ve'lavim is not telling you that this woman is allowed to marry a Kohen. All the rush is telling you is that she's not a zona. Okay, and we'll see the spin-off of this. She cannot marry a Kohen under a different psul. Not the psul of zona, but under the psul of bas Kohen ki tia l'ish zar. Ish zar, according to the rush, pasels hola kuhuna, even if it was just chai ve'lav. Okay. So now let's just summarize what we know as follows. According to the Rambam, nivlo l'chai ve'lavim nasei zona. According to the Rosh, again, there are different interpretations of the Rosh, but according to one interpretation of the Rosh, nivlo l'chai ve'lavim lo nasei zona, but mikomakom nifseles l'kuhuna mikra d'chsiv ubas kohen ki tia l'ishzar. Okay, so if you're... Do you have this on your page? I tried to cut and paste it on that page that I gave you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So again, if you want to... Again, whatever your minig is, but if you want to underline or highlight the main part of this... Of course, I can't find my copy of the page, but you'll see it on the bottom right column, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. Even though I changed the Tzuris Adafia when I cut and pasted it, but... Is there an extra copy of the handout? Just I can show you where I'm... sorry. I never take a handout for myself, because I always assume I have the original, but in this case I need it. Oh, okay, good. Thank you. So we have an extra copy. So what you'll see here, on the left side, the left column... If you could underline the following, just so we get the piece of the puzzle, but really what we want to get to is the shach. That's the main thing. Is according to the Rambam, is nivla l'chai ve'lav has the same status as nivla li'aku, is nasei zon. Okay, so that's what you want to underline. And then if you fast forward to the rush, which is 3.5 lines up before the end of the page, das atos v'yavamis v'arush v'arayvid, is nivla l'chai ve'lavim lo nasei zona, if you can underline those words, but mikomakom nifselis l'kuhuna, and that's a different sugya masechta Yevamos on daf samach aleph under the psul of kitia li'ish zar, bas kohen to kitia li'ish zar. Okay. Now there's an important nafkemina in the following way: the rush holds that the daughter of a zona is paguma lakon, whereas the Rambam holds that the daughter of a zona is kshera lakon lakuhuna. So you follow? The zona herself is psula lakuhuna, that's an iser lav. But even if she violates that lav, the Rambam's unique shita is, and again, if we were back in Siman Vav and Ishus and learning it for you, we'd have to figure this out, but the Rambam's shita is that the child from such a relationship, let's say you have a daughter from such a relationship, even though her mother's a zona and she's asura lakuna, the child is not asura lakuna. So the daughter of this relationship of a zona is allowed to marry Kohen according to the Rambam. The other Rishonim, including the Rosh, disagree with the Rambam, and they say that the daughter of a zona is psula lakuhuna. Okay. So the Gaon Mivilna points out in Biuri Agra that in the case of nivla l'chai ve'lavim, the Rosh holds that she's not a zona, and therefore the bas is not nifsula lakuhuna. We paskin that the daughter of a zona is psula l'kuhuna against the Rambam, correct? But the Rambam holds that the daughter of a zona is kshera l'kuhuna. So let's go step by step now. If a woman has a relationship with chai ve'lavim, according to the Rambam, what's her status? She's a zona. What's the status of her bas, of her daughter? She's Ksheira Lakuna. Just like the Rambam Shita in Akum HaBaal Bas Yisrael, that the Vlad, the daughter of such a relationship, was born Jewish because of her Jewish mother, is allowed to marry a Kohen. That's the unique Shita of the Rambam. We don't pass like the Rambam, but that's the Rambam Shita. Okay. Now let's look at the Rosh's Shita. The Rosh's of the opinion that the Rambam is incorrect as far as the psul of Zona in the case of Chayvei Lavi, and therefore the Gaon says that according to the Rosh, the daughter of Chayvei Lavi, although she's psula l'kahuna, but it's not under the category of Zona, it's under a different category called Bas Kohen Kitiel each zar includes Chayvei Lavi, and that's the Rosh Hashita, but nevertheless the daughter of such a relationship, says the Gaon, insofar as she's not a bas zona, right? She's not the product of a relationship between a zona and a kohen. That daughter is allowed to marry a kohen. So what it comes out is the following, Rabosai, that even though we're going to assume that the like the Rambam, that the relationship between a chayvei lavim and a bas Yisrael engenders a psul zona. And even though the daughter of a zona, we're going to assume like the Rush against the Rambam, is psul kahuna, says the Divrei Yosef, based on the fact that the Beis Yosef in the Shulchan Aruch here omits the psul of the daughter of Chayvei Lavim, right? That daughter is allowed to marry a Kohen. Now it makes no sense. Why? Because conceptually, how can that daughter marry a Kohen? We have to worry about the Rambam Shita, and that's how it's Nifsak L'Halacha, that the relationship between Chayvei Lavim and this woman, the mother I'm talking about, engenders a psul zona, not like the Rosh. And at the same time, we're machmir like the Rosh Shita against the Rambam, that the daughter of a zona is psul lakuna. And therefore, if you take this approach conceptually, combining all the Piskei Halacha and all the rules that govern Ebenezer, the daughter of Chayvei Lavim cannot marry a Kohen. Why then does the Shulchan Aruch omit the psul of the daughter of Chayvei Lavim? Says the Divrei Yosef, and this you'll see if you turn your page to the other side, that Mimonefshach, the Rambam, or the Rosh, would both agree that the daughter is Ksheira Lakuna. The Rambam would agree that the daughter is Ksheira Lakuna because the Rambam holds that the daughter of a Zona relationship, meaning even in the case of Akum HaBaal Bas Yisrael, is Ksheira Lakuna. That we don't accept. But the Rambam would therefore assume that the daughter of Chayvei Lavim, who's no different than the daughter of Akum HaVeved HaBaal Bas Yisrael, is Ksheira Lakuna. The Rush, on the other hand, would say the daughter is Ksheira Lakuna because the mother is not a Zona. Her status is that of the Psul of Kitia Lishzar, which doesn't engender a psul in the daughter. But there's a logical contradiction in your psak. But nevertheless, he says that what? That it should be mutter. Why is it mutter? He says the following. I underline this in the paragraph, Ulam. Nehi, Tibesima Dal. Back in Sima Dal Pasak, the Shulchan Aruch accepts the Rosh. Da Vlad Pogum Lekuhuna. That a Vlad of a zona is pogum l'kahuna, and let's assume, for argument's sake, that we're machmir for the Rambam Shita, namely that even Chayvei Lavim engenders the psul of zona, is mamele the Vlad has to be pogum l'kahuna. Mikomakom, he says l'das harosh harei ein anivelis l'chayvei Lavim nifselis l'kahuna. Bitoris what? Bitoris zona. Her problem is only kisil ish zar, and the Gaon already pointed out that doesn't extend to the next generation, so the psul doesn't apply to the bas. Is there therefore, and I underline this at the end of the paragraph, ulam v'kan l'chol echad l'shitoso, meaning whether it's the Rosh l'shitoso, the Rambam l'shitoso, yesh heter v'ein abas nifgemis l'kuhuna. The bas is ksheir l'kuhuna. The Rambam would be Masher Hadakuna because of his Shita about the daughter of his Zona. The Rush would pass law because he holds that this is not his daughter of his Zona, because she's not his Zona, she's under the psul of Kisiel Ishar. And if both the Rambam and the Rosh would be Maksha the daughter, but for two different reasons, neither of which are accepted la'alocha. Conceptually, we don't accept those two reasons. But the Posek, if he was sitting here, we go back to the Gavra Posek, and everybody, it turns out, would be Maksha. And in the last paragraph, he says this is based on the Shach. Again, the Shach doesn't address this case. The Shach is talking about Hilchus Treifus. But the Shach says that im lechol echad be'a poskim yesh tzad heter mitam acher afal pishe b'chol echad b'fnei atzmo paskin lechumra. If we isolate each issue, we would have to go lechumra. But imis mikomakom yisrami shelechol poskim l'shitasa yesh tzad heter yesh lahakil v'davar. In other words, where does the Shach put the emphasis? On the principles and the concepts in halacha, or on the gavra, so to speak, the posek, who has to be satisfied and nod his head that this is kosher? Then, did I lose you all? I lost you.
Yeah.
Wow. I was working very hard. You know, I'm schwitzing away. Again, I'll try it one more time, if you don't mind. Because again, this is, although it's not sukkah, but it's really klalei apsak, which is in and of itself a fascinating discipline in halacha. What does the psak halacha, what are the rules that govern psak halacha with regard to a case where if we apply the principles of halacha as they were codified, as they were accepted by the Shulchan Aruch, this has to be kosher, but if we go back to all the poskim, each one of the poskim, in and of its of himself, would be machshir because of his unique shita. So, on a logical basis, in terms of the principles of halacha, this would certainly be awesome. But nevertheless, if we go to the poskim and we pick them off one by one, so to speak, each one of the poskim is going to be machshir. So we're involved in a conceptual contradiction because conceptually we've adopted la halacha certain principles, but nevertheless, can we be machshir based on the poskim themselves?
Can I use?
Just give me one more minute. I'm sorry, I apologize, but just so who knows the answer to this question? I need a one word answer. One word?
Kosher.
The Shach. Because the Taz is going to disagree. That's why I say Shach. The Shach says that, you know what? Be oblivious to the logical concepts and principles that should govern this case. Meaning, we've accepted the principle of halacha that if a woman has a relationship with Chayvei Lavim, she has the status of a Zona. In that sense, we're reflecting the Rambam sheet. We've also accepted la halacha, and the Shulchan Aruch reflects this in Siman Dalet, that the daughter of a Zona is disqualified for a Kohen. Therefore, if I take these two logical principles and I churn them together, then the daughter of a relationship of Chayvei Lavim must be Psula Lakuna. Because I have to keep in mind that the halacha reflects the Rambam Shita, that she is a Zona, the mother's a Zona. I have to reflect the Rosh Hashita, which accepted halacha, that the daughter of a Zona is Psula Lakuna. Says the Shach, it's mut. Again, that's the Dibur Yosef's chap in the Shach. The Shach establishes this in a different context. Why is the daughter mutter? Because the Rambam would be matter. Why would the Rambam be matter? Because the Rambam holds the daughter of his own is not Psula Kuna. And the Rosh would be matter for a different reason, because the mother's not his owner. And even though none of those logical rules have been adopted in the codes, as long as we satisfy the Rambam who's sitting here and the Rosh who's sitting here, we can be machshir. This is the Shach. The Taz goes ballistic over this. The Taz says, how can you play games like that? You know, we don't care if the Rishonim are machshir. What we care is whether the Klolei Apsak can be reconciled with your final conclusion.
Go ahead. So in other words, we have a din called Subject Rabbanim Lahaka, and that should apply when we talk about a rabbinic law. But here we're dealing with the Darshan law, but you have a Subject amongst the Rishonim, and now you're redefining Subject Rabbanim Lahaka, saying, each one of these rabbanim. Talking about the raisa thing, but since there's a suffix amongst the rabbanim, we're going to redefine suffix rabbanim lahakel.
Okay, I didn't see it exactly that way. Maybe you're seeing it in a slightly different perspective. What I'm suggesting is that according to the Shach, as long as each one of the rishonim would be machshir, that's all we need. That's why I call it a vidata rishonim here. We invite the rishonim to sit around that table, according to the Shach. This is what we have to envision in our minds. And each rishon paskins. And if we can satisfy all the rishonim that this case is mutter, then it's mutter. I don't care about how we've adopted through the codes various principles. That's irrelevant. Forget about the principles. We'll be meisiach das from the principles of Allah. Why do I mention this to you in this context? First of all, I think it's fascinating just how Pesach evolves.
It's parallel to the...
But I think, it's parallel to this Arch Haner, because the Arch Haner would have to admit that if in terms of the Klali Pesach, each one of these Lulavim has to be excluded. But on the other hand, if you gather together the Ve'idah, as I call it, of each one of these Rishonim...
Sure, that's what people say, that the other one's Kasher.
Right, no, right, exactly. In other words, but they all would tell you that you were Yotze, correct? Each one for a different reason, but they would all come to the same conclusion, Yotze Yedei Chobos. We have to satisfy the Rishonim. We don't have to satisfy the Klali Pesach. That's what I thought is interesting. By the way, once we're on this topic, again, I'm, my wife doesn't like when I stream of consciousness, she calls it, but I'm in one of those moods today, When we're talking about, three lulavim on the table, there's a famous question of Reb Chaim Brisker that he used to ask his students to sharpen their mind. It's like a trick question. You intuitively say X, but it's really Y, the opposite. So what was the case? He said he had two esrogim. Here they are on the table. One esrog, we're not sure if it's an esrog at all, but it's absolutely stunning. It's a mahudar, beautiful. But it might be 11. That's the only problem. The second esrog is like base bottom, no heather at all, but it's definitely an esrog. So he says the following. You have these two esrogim on the table. The truth is you can take both of them. No one's preventing you. The halacha would not object taking both. But he would ask his students, in what sequence should he take the two esrogim? Which one should he take first? So first of all, I'd like to get a knee-jerk reaction. Ramesh, like a robot, without even thinking, which one should he take first?
The kosher esrog.
The kosher esrog. Says Reb Chaim Pumfaket, why? Why do Reb Chaim think that you should take the suffix first? Can you figure that out? This is how Reb Chaim used to train his students. He was such a pedagogue. What do you want to fulfill here? In the perfect world, what are your two goals? Your first goal is to fulfill the mitzvah of lulav, correct? The esrog. What's your second goal? Zekeli vanveyu, right? To achieve hidu. Says Reb Chaim, you can only do that and achieve both your goals if you begin with the suffix esrog. Why? Because if you begin with the vaday esrog, then what happens? You yotze, and it's too late to obtain hidu. So he says the following: take the first one, which is a suffix esrog, first, and then imarsh. If you yotze, then you also achieved hidu because it's a beautiful esrog. And if it's not an esrog, it's a lemon, then you'll be yotze the basic bits with the second esrog. So in terms of the sequence, Chaim said it's critical that you start with the esrog that's a suffix kosher. It's a little counterintuitive, but that's the way. That's Reb Chaim.
That's one of the shit that the hit is basically saying,
if I may or not, Pi'etzad. Oh, right, Pi'etzad, right. Rashi, the beginning of Lulav Hayomesh.
Ties with Rashi together.
Right. Okay, good. All right, so now we spoke a little bit about Solik B'chad Hutza, and now we have now the sugya of Nechlechat Yomes. And let's see where we'll hold. Okay, this belong to anybody? This was extra. Okay, good. So I'll keep it in my archive, so to speak. Alright. So now we have Nechlecha Atyomes, and the Gemara really vacillates back and forth about Nechakat Yomis. There's a long discussion here about what exactly is Nechakat Yomis. What is the mitzvah here of Nechakat Yomis? So, the question is, do we understand the various shitos here? It's very difficult to get a grasp on this. We'll try to at least extrapolate one or two points that we can understand. According to Rashi says, which you'll see here, it's about 15 lines down from the top, Shnei Olim Elyonim Emtzoyim. There are two main like leaves or branches coming up to the top of the lulav, and they got split. Okay, now these two olim, Rashi says, he adds this, which is Shom HaSidra Kol, Shidra Kol. That's where the Shidra comes to an end, and coming out above the Shidra are these two major olim, and they got split into two. That's called the Tiyomis. Then Rashi adds something else. He says, V'nistaka HaShidra Ad HaOlim Shalamata Mehen. So this gets a little bit confusing. It would seem from Rashi that there's more to it than just the splitting of the two top Olim. Rashi adds another piece here. And he says that there's a Sedek in the Shidra itself. Again, the Rashi had said before in the Reisha that these two Olim come above the Shidra. But now Rashi's saying that even the Shidra itself is impaired. How so? He says, Nistaka HaShidra, there's some sort of Sedek in the Shidra. Kol Kach Ad Shenirisha Olim Elyonim Chalukim Umefuzarim Zemizeh. In other words, Rashi somehow is not satisfied by saying Nechlekat Yomis just means that the two top Olim were separated one from the other, but it really has to look as if the Olim are completely separated. You know, so sometimes they're separated, but you know, if you have to look carefully and you know and scrutinize them in order to see that they're split. But Rashi says that in this case there was a Sedek in the Shidra, and that Sedek in the Shidra was significant enough, in which the Shidra itself was split, so that the Olim Elyonim are like Chalukim Zemizem, Mefuzarim Zemizem, these two top Olim are really, really significantly separated one from the other. I'm not sure if there's a picture in the back. Does anybody want to, you know, volunteer to look for it here?
Is this it?
No, this is something else. I'm sure he has a picture of this somewhere, just that I don't have the time right now to look for it. So that's number one. Then we have a second perush, and this he quotes in Dagos HaSmak. It's a slight variation on Rashi, and it says that the Ole HaEmtzoi HaElyon, again, we're still focusing on the top Ole, above the Shidra, Osui Mishnei Olim HaMuchubarim Begavam V'Nechleku Migabo. In other words, somehow the two Olim on top are meant to be absolutely attached to each other. In other words, in this Pirush, in the name of the Hagos HaSmach, it doesn't have to be as radically separated and as obviously apparently separated as Rashi has it. And then he quotes the Rambam. The Rambam says that each one of the olim of a lulav in its natural state, at least for most lulavim, we'll call it the normal lulav, is made up of two olim. Every olim is made up of two olim, right? We spoke about this before when we talked about solik v'chad hutza according to the Rambam, and there's an attachment on the back that combines and connects the two parts, the two olim that make up each olah, so to speak. And in Rove of the Olim, there's a split Migavam. In other words, that connecting point that connects the two Olim is broken in Rove of the Olim of the Lulav. And here, he quotes a Me'iri in the footnote. that reinterprets the Rambam and says that even if one ola is split, that itself comes under the psul of nichlaka atiyos. But the word rove in the Rambam is not referring to rove of the olim, but rove of one ola. So for example, if the ola is this size in length, and it's made up of two olim that are connected migabam, so according to the Meiri's interpretation of the Rambam, if rove of that one ola, any ola that you like, is split, and the gav is broken for rove of that ola, that's what the Rambam means in its possible. That's called nechlekat tiyomis. Whereas according to the simple pshat in the Rambam, before the Meiri, you take all the olim of the lulav, and you count them, and if the majority of those olim are split, right, because each olim is made of two olim that are connected, then and only then is it possible. The Meiri claims that his pshat is better in the Rambam because the Gemara used the term tiomes, which is singular. According to the interpretation of the Rambam, that rove of the olim were nechlaka, then it shouldn't have said tiomes in the singular, it should have been tiomos or something along that line in the plural. There are other perushim here. For example, Tosfos, not here, but elsewhere in Bava Kamma, quotes the Tshuvas HaGaonim. And according to the Tshuvas HaGaonim, there's another pshat in Nechlaka Tiyomes. Oso Hutzah HaElyon. We're talking about one specific, one particular Ola. This is the Ola. He calls it the Hutzah HaElyon, with the Heya Yediyah, which is Barosh HaLulav. Ain hutzah lemala mimenu, and there's no ola that goes above it, and that's called the tiyomis. In Rashi, it sounds like that would also be called the tiyomis, but yet Rashi's language is general enough. He says that there are two olim elyonim, and they were both separated one from the other. Here we're talking about one specific ola ha-elyon, and that got split. That's called nechlaka ha-tiyomis. Okay. Now, what I'd like to do with you for the rest of the time that we have, the few minutes that we have left, is the case of Charusa. Okay, so we're sort of fast-forwarding here, and maybe we'll come back to it. Do you see the case of Charusa? Amalei Ravina L'Rav Ashi. Fine. Yeah. The Gemara is actually analyzing what does kapos tmar mean? What qualifies as a lulav and is described by the Torah as kapos tmar. So the Gemara says, Ema charusa ve'ina. He says, maybe a charusa would be a candidate for kapos tmar. Rashi says, charusa. Anaf hadekel mishen iskasha. You remember this story, we discussed it last week, that the branch of the date tree becomes very hard with time. After two or three years, Rashi says, v'yotzimbolu lovim harbe shenoshu alim and iskashu, and it became very tough, very hard. V'nasuke eitz, they became like a piece of wood. So the Gemara asks the question that is it possible that a charusa, which is two or three years down the line on the tree, that would be a lulav, that would qualify as kapos tmar. So let's see it again. Ema charusa, perhaps a charusa, and the Gemara answers, be'inan kafus v'leka. It's about two-thirds down your page. So I want to share with you a question here on a question. A question on a question. Meaning, what was the hava mina of the Gemara that charusa would actually qualify as a lulav? Let's go back to the Mishnah. And you recall that the Mishnah records a machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim about the case of nifridu olav. It means that the branches of the lulav are separated from the lulav itself, from the shidra of the lulav, but they're still attached. And it's not like nifritzu, where they were completely detached. In the case of nifritzu, The Gemara analyzes the case of Nifritzu from the perspective of connecting them and binding them together. It's like a broom, and the Gemara says it's not a lulav. But in the case of Nifridu, the Mishnah records that Nifridu is kosher. But here there's a machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. Rabbi Yehuda says, Ya'agdenu milamala. That even though they're attached, the branches of the lulav are attached, nevertheless you still have to bind them together. And if you don't bind them together, the lulav is possible. The Chacham don't require Yagdenu milamala, Nifridu olav kosh. So now the question is, how could Charusa, which is tough, right, it's hard, and it cannot lend itself to being tied together, how could the Gemara think that that would qualify as a lulav? Meaning, we already know the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda, unless this Gemara is going according to Chachamim, but if we assume the Gemara is asking a question that could work out even according to Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda has already committed himself that a lulav needs this connection, that all the various branches are bound together. And therefore by Nifrudu Olav, he requires Kofus, he requires Agat. So therefore, in the case of Charusa, how could it possibly be kosher? It's impossible to bind together the various parts of this lulav. In fact, there's only really one anaf that's left. So you don't have many anafim that could be bound together. So one of the achronim here says the following. That although the Chachamim agree that you need kafus, imhu roi l'kfisa, that's okay. In other words, the case of Nifridu, which the Chachamim say is kosher even without kafus, without doing the agad, that's because it's roi l'kfisa. But Charusa could not be kosher because it's eino roi l'kfisa. So in other words, the Achronim are reading the Gemara as follows. Ema, could it possibly be Charusa? And even though it says kapos tmarin, which means kafus, that we have to take the various branches, like in the case of Nifidu, and tie them together, which we cannot do in the case of Charusa. Nevertheless, the requirement of kafus, at least according to the Rabbanon of Rabbi Yehuda, if we go with that approach, is only lechatchila. It adds something to the mitzvah of lulav, but the lulav doesn't have to lend itself to kfisa, and therefore charusa could be a candidate. And the Gemara answers no. Be'inon kafus v'leka. What do you mean be'inon kafus v'leka? You're going quite the Chachamim. The Chachamim don't require kafus. In the case of Nifridu olav, they don't require that you bind together the various anofim of the lulav. So what does the Gemara mean when it says be'inon kafus v'leka? So the Achronim say, Be'inon roi l'kfisa. Why is Charus excluded? Because it's not roi l'kfisa. But in the case of Nifridu, at least it's roi l'kfisa. And if it's roi l'kfisa, I don't need kfisa. It turns out the following, Rav Osai, that there are two dinim over here. That's what I'd like to add to these Achronim. There's one din in the Maisa Netila. The Netila has to be a beautiful netila in which there's kafus. If you drop the kafus, the Chachamim say, okay, you didn't beautify the netila, but nevertheless you have a lulav and you yoke. But if you have a lulav that you cannot beautify it and enhance it by doing kafus, it's ain't a royal kfisa, then the lulav itself becomes possible. So what we're suggesting here is that there are two kinds of psulim and lulav. There's one kind of psulim lulav, which is only l'chatchila, which means you're lacking some sort of embellishment of the maisa netila. That, although l'chatchila is a requirement, b'dieved yoytze. But there's a different kind of psulim. When it's not roi, when the lulav itself has a cheftza, doesn't lend itself to the embellishment of the mitzvah by doing it with kafus, then the lulav itself is excluded. Like, for example, let's say we're going to get in Yitzchak Shem on Wednesday, we'll cover the sugya of the Shear of Lulav. The Shear of Lulav needs a fourth tefach. Why is a fourth tefach? Because of Nanuim. The Nanuim require one tefach above the other three minim, above the other two minim, which are three tefachim. So you need the extra tefach. But wait a minute. What happens if I don't do Nanuim? I'm Yotzei anyway without Nanuim. The Gemara says, me to Agbe Nafek, but all I have to do is pick up the Dalet Minim. But the Lulav as a Cheft has to be royal in Nanuim. And if I need the fourth Tefach to have the potential that the Lulav could be used for the Mitzvah of Nanuim. Although the Mitzvah and the Kiyum of Nanuim is not indispensable, and I can achieve the Mitzvah without Nanuim, but I need a Cheftza Shalulav that's royal in Nanuim. Well, I'll give you another example. What's the shear of a Ner Chanukah? How much oil do I have to put in the Ner? Then it could light for a half hour. But what happens, Kav? So we pass the Kav saying Zakaklo. It was lit for a minute. An unusual wind came along and blew it out. I don't have to rekindle it. Again, there are different dinim of Hashad, but Migra Din, I don't have to rekindle it. But you just finished telling me that the Ner Chanukah has to have enough oil in it to last for a half hour. But it didn't last for a half hour. The answer is, to last for a half hour, that's a cube of Pirsum HaNes. The Cheft of the Ner has to be Roy for the cube of Pirsum HaNes in the most embellished way, meaning a full half hour. If there's not enough oil that allows the Ner potentially to achieve a full-fledged mitzvah, the Shleimus HaMitzvah of a half hour of Pirsum HaNes, then the Chefza Shel Ner is disqualified. So I always, when I define the Cheftza, I need that the Cheftza lend itself potentially to the Shleimus HaMitzvah. Even though in the Kiyum HaGavra, when you implement the mitzvah, you don't have to achieve the Shleimus HaMitzvah. So there are elements here which are necessary to beautify and complete the mitzvah for the Shleimus HaMitzvah. For example, Chachamim agree that you need Kafus to tie up the Nifrid du Olav and achieve the Shleimus HaMitzvah. But nevertheless, even if I don't do the act of Kafus, and I don't bind together the various branches of the Lulav, as long as the Lulav in and of itself lends itself to Kafus, it's royal Kfisa, I'm Yotzi the Mitzvah. But if the Cheft of the Lulav is not royal Kfisa, for example, in this case of Harusa, there, the Lulav itself is not a Cheft of Lulav, for the mitzvah k'shira. You cannot fulfill the mitzvah with a cheftza that's not roy for the shleimus mitzvah. Okay, we'll stop here.
All right.
Yeah. Any questions or anything? Any comments?
Okay, please.